Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 1 of 4, episode 4 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck Coke Industries, as in the Coke Brothers.
Fuck,
fuck Fox News.
Fuck them.
It's Thursday, October 17th, 2019. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Sweaty Arms, which is my Wu-Tang a.k.a. and
you
Golden
got
Arms. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
A.k.a.
Why Miles Gray till he gotta be gray?
Thank you to @MSWord for that Lizzo-inspired a.k.a.
Mm.
Man, I don't know if you saw that clip of her at Austin City Limits.
I did not.
The entire crowd lost their mind. As they do.
As they do at Lizzo shows. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the baddest bitch in the room, Sophia Chang.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Sophia Chang. Okay, first of all, I have to say, this is a very great guest for us to have.
I know.
Brought to us by the Zeit Gang.
Yes.
Surprisingly, this is so much synergy
going
on here.
Freaking out a little bit.
Sophia Chang, you are a legend.
You delivered my childhood to me. You made my childhood possible.
For people who do not know, this Korean Canadian made her way to New York, and I just has a hip hop history of running through her veins.
Yes,
I cannot say the number of people who you have crossed paths with, from everyone in Wu-Tang to Raphael Sadiq to D'Angelo, one of my favorite artists.
Ever.
Fucking Reggie Noble, Red Man himself.
Yes.
My first fake ID name was Reggie Noble. When I went to fucking MacArthur Park to get my shit, I was fucking Reggie Noble.
I like that.
My other friend was Warren G. Harding.
Red Man. No, it wasn't.
Because he wanted to be Warren G. the rapper, but we didn't know what we couldn't make that a real name, so he couldn't just have his fake ID name be Warren G. So he was Warren G. Harding.
Isn't that a president's name?
Yes.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
And you guys got into places?
Yeah, well, it was just to buy cigarettes and shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Anyway,
so
Sophia, did you sell Lucy's on the street?
Did not sell Lucy's.
Okay.
No.
That's the name of a Daz Effect song, but referring to the shits.
So again, thank you for coming.
Sophia. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
People don't know you have a book out.
Yes.
The baddest bitch in the room.
An wasn't audiobook, just, that's yeah, right.
Wasn't I wasn't just, Jack. Just putting my chest out, calling you
the TBBI.
I do not possess the self-confidence to
TBBITR, yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not HBIC.
Yes.
Sophia, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. We're just going to marvel at the bad run for billionaire activists that we're on with Jay-Z and Bill Gates and LeBron, not necessarily a billionaire.
Ooh,
and his sins are probably 50% as bad as the other billionaires, but we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the Democratic debates. We're going to talk... we're not going to talk much about the whistleblower scandal today.
Mm. Not much whistle to be blown.
Not much. It would be
Short Dog would be sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be dominating the news in any other administration, but in the Trump administration, it's a slow news day.
Yeah. Kinda.
Yeah. When it comes to the whistleblower allegations. Yeah. Are we not? We're not going to do the Short Dog.
Oh, there it
Thank
is.
Thank you, sir. We're going to talk about what the president was up to yesterday. We're going to talk about Hot 97's no Tekashi policy, all of that, and plenty more. But first, Sophia, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a person?
So my latest search was for custom hoodies.
Oh, okay.
And I just made custom hoodies that say the baddest bitch in the room on them because
yes.
Lena Waithe, warrior goddess, posted a picture of herself on Instagram in one of my hoodies.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, which is exceptional. And what I would say that says about me is, well, it's the title of my memoir.
Yeah.
And Lena said, thank you for making this. It was important. I think she understands that for any of us women... or men, frankly, who live on the margins, to stand up and announce that we're the baddest bitch in the room.
Yeah.
It's a political act, ultimately, right?
It's
radical.
And claiming space like that, for sure.
Yes. So bonfire.com/baddest bitch in the room.
It's a dope memoir name.
Yes, thank
indeed.
You.
I'm just jealous that members of Wu-Tang will walk you to the subway station.
Yeah.
Miles, so you've read it.
I'm fucking, bro, I'm sorry, look, I'm just off top, right? If you have any, if 90s hip hop resonates with you in any way.
It is.
Your memoir is such a front row seat, not only for people who love hip hop, for Asian Americans, Asian Canadians, Asian people, minorities operating in spaces that they don't feel that they are included in.
Mm.
I think there's so many levels that your book hits. Especially for me,
right.
I'm like, you know, being biracial, you don't, half the time
and
you don't know where you fit.
And biracial, black, and Asian.
Yeah, you don't know where you fit. Half the time I have to laugh at when my own cousins call me Jackie Chan.
Right.
And then also laugh at like racist black jokes that Asian people might say.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think growing up and realizing, sort of dismantling a lot of the internalized racism and sort of like mental colonialism that you battle with.
Sure.
I think there's, it's such a great book. And I really can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Lauren,
I'm so happy that it's, thank you so much.
It's really, really something else.
So happy that it resonated with you.
Yeah. And like, it's not like you had a front row seat, like from managing some of these great artists to working very closely with them to like introducing RZA to Shaolin. There's so much, there's so many levels.
Introducing RZA to Shaolin.
Like, officially.
Right.
You know what I mean?
What the fuck?
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I feel like these are stories that you just don't realize. And that's why I think it's so important for this book, because you realize who, like, the forces at work for things that we take very much for granted. So, I'll stop fanning out.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. No, I think that's a really good point. You know, Hari Kondabolu, the Indian director and comedian, he interviewed me and he said, you know, Sophia, much like what you're saying, I was a teenager growing up in Queens and I loved hip hop.
Mm.
And I wish I had known that in the midst of all of that music that spoke so deeply to me, that there was an Asian.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's my decision.
Not to
put myself out there more,
you
know, and that was a very interesting part of the process of even arriving at the place where I would choose to step into the spotlight, because I shunned it for so long.
Right.
So I'm glad that it resonated with you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What is something you think is overrated?
Mediocre white men.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. You're superior. What are you, superior? Mediocre? middling.
He's obviously not mediocre at certain things. But we're all mediocre at certain things. Yeah. But you guys know what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, I think people who don't acknowledge their privilege or try and use their place in society to open doors.
Born on second, thinking they hit a double. Born on third, thinking they hit a triple. Or they think they hit a home run and they were born on third base. I mean, whereas most of us aren't even allowed into the house.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that it's
not. Or the dugout.
Or the dugout, exactly. It's not necessarily even them. It's also that society, because we live in white supremacy, because we live in white patriarchy, it's that society allows them to continue to ascend.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, look at the White House.
Yeah.
Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote beautifully about this.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got this that amazing essay, We Were 8 Years in Power. And that really, first of all, he's like the greatest writer of our time. And second of all, just the way that he laid that out was really enlightening for me.
Yeah.
What was it like navigating the music industry at that time where you had, I'm sure, many white music executives trying to like wrestle with rap in the early 90s?
That's a fun question.
Any mountain climbers who play an electric guitar?
As a matter of fact, I'm going to speak to that exactly. There was, you know, my boss was Barry Weiss at Jive Records. White guy, his father, Hi Weiss, was also a music executive. And what I loved about Barry's a Cornell grad, one of the smartest people I ever met, one of the best record company people I ever met. Barry never tried to be anything but what he was.
Right.
He wore Argyle socks, wool vests. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
just and was who he was. He never changed up his style, how he spoke, how he dressed or anything. And I think people respected him for that. I certainly did. Whereas there were other executives who just wanted to be Diggy Down, right? So they're wearing their baseball hats backwards. They start wearing backpacks.
No.
It's like, homie, you're 50, right. you know?
They're like, you like my cross colors overalls? They're like, what?
And, you know, and they're wearing baggy jeans and everything. And look, I too, you know, absolutely adopted some of the styles, but there was something that felt inorganic about it
for
certain people. Mm-hmm. And I just had this conversation with a friend recently, and I think that it was so refreshing when I met people like my mentor, Michael Austin, who ran A&R at Warner Brothers Records with his father, the legendary Mo Austin. Same thing with Michael.
Mm-hmm.
He never, you know, the French have a saying, bien dans la peau, which means good in your skin. Mm. And him and Barry were so good in their skin, they never felt like they had to feign anything else to be accepted. Because you know what happens is the opposite happens when you try so
hard.
Oh,
God.
You know, when you thirst for that acceptance, it's like,
That's not who you are. Just be yourself, and
you know, you'll be good. So it was interesting to watch. And, you know, just like you're talking about being half Black and half Asian, right? We exist in this space in between almost. And so certainly being the first Asian woman in hip-hop, I'm a woman and I'm Asian and I'm in between the Black-white binary.
Right.
Okay. And so that space for me, at first it was daunting. I definitely had imposter syndrome. I wasn't sure that, you know, how could I be the person that could be the gatekeeper or say what was suitable. But once Barry gave me the job and once I found that I was so warmly embraced by the community, which was a privilege, like you're acknowledging privilege, those fears melted away really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, at first, I was like, am I the right person?
I'm sure, right? And people probably trying to pull your card and stuff and being
sure.
do you know?
Right. Right. Sure.
Totally. What's something you think is underrated?
Black women.
Hey.
And I want to frame that correctly. When I say mean underrated, I mean undervalued.
Yeah, underappreciated.
You know, underappreciated, underseen, underpaid, undertaken care of. You know, I always talk about the motherfucking village that raised Sophia Chang.
Mm-hmm.
And pillars of that village are Black women. They are Black feminists. They are Black journalists. They are Black academics. They are Black thinkers. And they have taught me so much about this country and just about how race works within the country. And it's been illuminating for me to be able to And, you know, it's such an honor to just be able to have them as these guides and these teachers. And, you know, we've seen all the stats. 96% of Black women voted for Hillary, right? And, you know, the numbers are staggering. And then you look at how ill-regarded they are getting killed in their own homes, right?
Right.
And, you know, the maternal mortality rate and all that. So that's the fire that's like, that's burning in me today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. What is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false?
That Asian men aren't sexy.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have a problem if you have a preference. I totally get that. We all have preferences. But when people make the blanket statement.
Right. Speaking that, absolutes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody. You know, nobody finds Asian men sexy. I want to slap the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Because you are effectively erasing a whole gender of a whole race. And I've been thinking about this a lot, you guys, in terms of my memoir, mm-hmm. Visibility and Erasure.
Right. Mm.
And Black women too, erased.
Right.
Me too, erased, right? And how we actively have to ourselves unerase ourselves and give ourselves the visibility, which isn't fair. We shouldn't have to do that. We should just have it, right? But we don't. So we have to fight for that. So, you know, the notion, I mean, the father of my two children is a 34th generation Shaolin monk who could kill you with his bare hands in 30 seconds. But there are a myriad other incredibly sexy men. Bruce Lee, God rest his soul, Chiyun Fat, Tony Leung, I mean, Jake Choi. It's just to the way that the West has systematically emasculated and castrated my brothers while simultaneously exoticizing, eroticizing, and fetishizing me is infuriating.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You fell in love with Chiyun Fat because of who?
So I grew up yellow in a white world.
Right.
And yellow wanting to be white in a white world. Sure. And then I heard hip hop, then I moved to New York, and then I meet Wu-Tang, and, you know, they're talking about, you know, Ray, you know, there's that great skit on 36 Chambers where Ray is saying, you know, meth, where's my killer tape? Where's my killer tape? And I was like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to pay attention to this, because they were so deeply respectful of Asian culture in general, but they love John Woo. So I watched The Killer and I watched Hard Boiled, and I went down the John Woo rabbit hole and I watched all of his movies. I still have the laser discs. I watched all of his movies.
I actually still have laser.
Google it.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've seen The Killer. It's my favorite movie of all time. Chiyun Fat is his muse in the same way that De Niro Scorsese's muse. And to me, John Woo was the greatest director of all time, and Chiyun Fat is the greatest actor of all time. And I think that what Asian action movies manage to do that I don't know that Western ones are able to do is infuse philosophy. And maybe that comes from the martial arts tradition, right? Because in the martial arts movies, you have action, but you always have philosophy, whether it's Buddhism or Taoism or, you know, a form of Confucianism. And so a perfect example, I'll tell you, there's a movie called The Departed, right? And it was huge. It won the Academy Award that year. That movie was a remake of a Hong Kong movie called Infernal Affairs.
Right.
And it was directed by Andy Lau, I believe. Now, if you watch The Departed, it was my favorite movie of that year. If you watch The Departed and then you watch Infernal Affairs, you can see that The Departed had to have a Hollywood ending.
Right.
In a way that Infernal Affairs did not feel beholden to make, you know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, right. The
bad guy's going to get it. And the conflict, and there were great actors in The Departed. Yeah. And he's an amazing director. But the conflict that was demonstrated in Infernal Affairs was made that movie so much more touching and compelling, emotionally compelling for me.
Yeah. Does it end with a rat coming in and winking at the camera? Or it doesn't? Fuck.
That should be the alternate ending. It might be on the Laserdisc version.
Flip your Laserdisc over. See.
A, B.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some billionaire activists, guys, because we've had a run with Jay-Z partnering with the NFL and saying that we're beyond kneeling. We had recently found out that Bill Gates had a shadow relationship with Jeffrey Epstein that started after Epstein got away with sex trafficking.
Oh, and then Bill Gates is like, you know what? I want to try and chill with that.
Yeah, let's kick it. Beginning in 2011, according to the New York Times, Bill Gates met with Mr. Epstein on numerous occasions, including at least three times at Mr. Epstein's palatial Manhattan townhouse, and at least once staying late into the night, according to interviews with more than a dozen people familiar with the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I saw somebody tweeted that it's a conscience laundering, like for some of these very wealthy people, giving money and helping people is conscience laundering. And I hope that's not what's happening.
Oh,
here,
right. Just to offset your fucked karmic balance.
Right.
Okay.
Now, LeBron is only worth only $450 million. And I don't think he deserves to be grouped with those other cases. But especially, I don't think either of them deserve to be grouped with Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Gates' weird friendship. I don't know. There's something about looking to extremely wealthy people for our leadership that just feels like especially wrong in a profoundly American way right now. Like that seems to be where we have been expecting who we've been expecting to solve our problems for a while, or at least to kind of be our thought leaders.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, like I said yesterday, I'm disappointed in myself for being disappointed in LeBron James' statement, because I shouldn't be looking to LeBron James just because I like him as a basketball player.
Well, it's a tough situation where you have people who might not be completely equipped to engage in things like this, who
right.
are speaking, and also... And probably their words betray their intent, which I think has probably happened with LeBron, because I think he does want to do right. But I think at the end of the day, just like Jay-Z, I think his money is the most important thing.
Right.
And they're moving like that. But I guess even with, you know, when you sort of look at the context around it, I think it is terrible that the league sort of put a lot of the responsibility on players to try and clean up the mess. That
yeah.
is really just, it's foundational to the actual organization itself. It's really shouldn't be on the players.
Yeah, I think when we spoke yesterday, I hadn't realized that LeBron was talking about the tweet, like Maury tweeting that statement while he and the entire Lakers team, and I think were the Rockets in China at that time too?
I think so.
Like there were two NBA teams in China at that time, and I know that that's probably, I think that puts some of the things he said about feeling, you know, bodily at risk in context.
Well, he said financially first, though, to
he
be fair.
He did say financially.
Financially, he said people could have been harmed financially.
Yeah. I kind of assume he's saying yes, financially, because that's what you're all thinking. But also, I don't know. There's a couple ways you could take it. But I also don't think it was just a poorly worded statement. I do think that it represents a fundamental kind of, I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of how Facebook keeps making mistakes that just happen to help their bottom line. Like,
right.
you know, it's like, oops, we fucked up again. And it happens to make us richer. And
I think, yeah, I think the thing that's disappointing is that a lot of people, based on a lot of the things LeBron James has said publicly and does through charitable organizations, that if there was a binary between choosing profits or the well-being of people and democracy, that he would choose democracy.
Right.
And I think this is what I think, if anything, people just realizing a lot of people really their bottom line is making money.
Right.
At the end of the day. And at a certain point when you get to this stature, what is he? I don't know if he's really willing to use his position to like try and affect that kind of change.
Right.
But and whatever. That's his prerogative. I think it's tough. It's hard to sort of thread that needle on one side, be like, yeah, I'm going to talk about injustice here when it doesn't actually cause me any financial risk.
Right.
But when it does abroad, I'll just kind of sort of shuffle.
Yeah.
So, wait, is Maury the guy that...
He's the general manager of the Houston Rockets who tweeted an image that said, like, stand with Hong
and
Kong.
Support, and support, and in support of,
yeah,
right?
In support.
And so LeBron said that was misinformed.
Well, he was saying, yeah, that he was misinformed. He was like, I think Daryl Morey, like, I don't want to start a spat. I believe he's not educated right on what is happening here. And it was very vague that people thought, like, what do you mean he's not on what? I imagine it probably came up because all sports journalists have been asking other players about
okay.
it. And I think, unfortunately, he found himself in a position where he was asked a question. He probably needed a little more, you know, PR refining on what his take should be to not fully rock the boat. But again, you know, I think many people just expected him to say, you know what, like, I fuck that, like, democracy forever. I'm with them. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I also think people probably were asking him about it. And I think part of his frustration was that the NBA was expecting players to be the spokespeople for it. So that was also some context that I had kind of missed at first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he said, I don't think every issue should be everybody's problem, which is, at first, it's like, okay.
I think it's like anything, right? Like, there's so much to be outraged in the world at a certain point.
Right.
I think what he's trying to say is, I'm not on top of everything, so I don't know everything as soon as it's happening.
Right.
And I think that's probably what he means. But then when you say things, it's almost, but to, if you sort of read it narrowly, it sounds like, look, man, I got, that's not my problem.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our impressions of the Democratic debate.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at PurdueGlobal.edu.
And we're back. And the Democrats were back in the spotlight, the Democratic presidential candidates, during the biggest presidential debate of all time.
Yeah. What a
like a cage match.
What
bro.
A match. Yeah. That went really nowhere. I don't know what the it seemed like. Clearly, the theme of the night was Elizabeth Warren's a front runner.
Right.
Let's fucking hit her from the right.
Yes.
That's all it was. The amount of words she spoke were, she spoke by far more than any candidate because I think everyone was directing their fire at her.
Right.
And, you know, it was really kind of odd to see people use the same tired line when she's talking about getting everyone in this country medically insured, that the great line that everyone says, how are you going to pay for that?
Right.
How are you going to pay for it? I know you literally just said how you're going to pay for that. But really, it was a match to try and get Elizabeth Warren to say out loud that, yes, your taxes will go up.
Yeah.
Because that's true. But however, it's all about cost, right? And that's the thing that – and this is where I think Bernie Sanders excelled, actually, because there were many moments where I think Elizabeth Warren was getting hit so much, she was finding herself – kind of like scrambling to sort of passionately defend what she's talking about. And there were moments where Bernie could, you know, he said, yeah, your taxes are going to go up. But here's the deal. He's like, why are we talking about this? Because really, the situation is like this because of the insurance companies, because of the pharmaceutical companies, because of Wall Street. That's what this is about. Don't like, why are we getting myopically focused on this tax thing?
It's a game theory thing where the other candidates know that she has basically created this rule for herself where she's not going to say, I'm going to raise your taxes.
Yeah, because she doesn't want an attack
ad. She just knows it's going to be an attack ad from Trump if she is the candidate. So she's just not going to say that. So they know that. And so they're going to use that against her to like bend her into all sorts of awkward wordings. And, you know, I don't think it's substantively very important, but I get the overall perspective that like, well, it's got to be a realistic plan. I don't think that's actually what they care about. And also, it's not a standard that the Republicans ever hold themselves to. But
I think that word realistic, though, is used in the context of what will the powers that be allow us to do?
Yes.
It's not revolutionary. You know what I mean? Revolutions aren't being like, well, what are they going to allow us to do? Right. You're going to be like, no, we're about to fucking turn this thing up.
Right.
Like, and we'll do it on our terms.
Right.
But everyone else is too shook. So they're doing like, well, how are you going to pay for that? I mean, then you're going to kick people off their insurance. You know, no one's getting kicked off of insurance. First of all, half the people who do pay for the insurance, tell me how many of y'all fucking like your insurance.
Right.
Look at Caitlin Durante, who's been on the show, who had to get her gallbladder removed, going through all kinds of hoops and took months for things like that to happen. And that's somebody who pays for insurance.
Yeah. Right. And had to appeal to like a public funding thing.
Right. Because like, that's how help with the that's where we're at.
That's where we're at.
And we're saying, how about a world where that is not a reality?
Right.
Rather than, well, what about the insurance people are happy paying for it? That's just a talking point from the insurance industry to be like, well, how do we keep our checks coming in?
Right. I think it's a thing where people who are insured through their employer are like, I don't want to lose my insurance, but that's because they're used to a world where you can lose your insurance and be completely financially fucked if you have to go to the hospital.
Sure.
So, of course, they don't want to lose their insurance. That's been like their life preserver in this like kill or be killed like world where you don't necessarily get insured. And these people are basically saying, we want to end the possibility that you won't be insured.
Yeah. It just reminded me, even when like she had to come at John Delaney a few debates ago, and she's like, why are we even bothering talking about shit if we're not talking about changing shit for real? Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't make sense. And I think that seemed to be the theme. But again, that's where Bernie really was very able, like very eloquently and passionately able to defend some of these ideas in a way that he was just like, fuck it. Y'all think I had a heart attack and I'm weak. Like, Watch this.
He was I'm gonna go the fuck in.
Yeah, he went all the way in. And you know, I think that was great because you need someone to, you know, because they are similar in certain ways, Warren and Sanders on certain policies, that you almost, it's good to hear that counterpoint, at least coming from Bernie, to understand like if for someone who's maybe put off by what they think Medicare for All means, to hear like what the stakes are for people, what that actually means. So I think there was also very little mention of climate change this time.
Yeah.
Very interesting time.
Well, that's because, I mean, that's not the real danger. The real danger is, you know, if you're friends with George W. Bush and like the whole Ellen scandal, I think was what was really on people's mind, because that was one of the questions, right?
Who's a surprising friend you'd have?
Yeah, who's a surprising friend?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
We have like people dying in the street. Okay. Right. And I think this is probably the issue with these debates is like, they're
that
just...
was one of the questions?
Yeah.
That was the last question, I think. That's who's what they closed out with. Who's a surprising friend you have?
I think that's just a moment for like white people that's to be so like, silly. This person of color.
Right.
Or some other thing. I don't know.
And they asked it in the context of the Ellen thing, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's sophomoric.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. And I think that's where we're really, these two debates do us a disservice because we're not confronting real systemic issues.
Right.
Like it's a lot of, okay, everyone do your book report.
Right.
What you talking about? Okay. I have a question about this book for them. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next person. I think they could get better, but we've seen them sort of like modulate between like, oh, okay, this felt a little more focused. This one felt like pageantry.
Are the town halls better?
The town halls are interesting. I saw the LGBTQ one last mm-hmm. week, and that felt, there were moments, and at least there were activists who got up, spoke out, put mm-hmm. some of the candidates on their heels by taking over the mic and mm-hmm. addressing things head on. I think that was actually a great thing to see mm-hmm. because usually a lot of these candidates are in controlled environments. They're not expecting someone to ask them directly a question. What are you going to do to protect trans women of color?
Right.
Who are being killed at an alarming rate.
Exactly.
And I think some people were able to move with it. Kamala Harris did not. She said when someone from the rafters was like, what are you going to do as president?
Right.
Like, we are out here getting killed. And she said, you're right. Her answer was, you're right. And then she couldn't quite articulate. So it was a little...
Yeah.
But that shows you, too, how many people who, as a candidate, no matter what you're being asked, you can respond. Like, you can, you know, it's like energy. Like, you can take that and redirect it and bring it back. Some people just, like, absorb it and get hit. And they're like, I don't know. Actually, yeah. It might not be happening in my brain. Mm-hmm.
So, according to the mainstream media and the monoculture, Mayor Pete was the real standout from the debate last night because he was the one
really?
Who kind of landed the punches that resonated the most on Warren.
Right.
And I don't know. Just by default, I feel like someone who's not Biden, who's a centrist, they need someone. The mainstream media needs someone who's going to be the man who's not a socialist of the field, it feels like. Like, that's, they're just like grasping for that. And they're seeing Biden
anti-billionaire.
Fade. Right.
But even the framing of that is frustrating.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? So meaning the fact that the person who is the standout is the one that lands the most punches.
Right.
And I understand that it's a debate, but a debate isn't about fucking gotcha.
Yeah,
right. Like, I sat there for hours with my team and I prepped and I wondered, what's the fucking zinger that I can ask that's going to knock her off her feet, right?
Yeah.
It's like, just, it's a rap battle or something.
Yeah.
But I mean,
they're like, oh, what?
The cipher.
Oh, no. Oh, everyone's running around the stage.
Like that meme? Like that.
Yeah. It's like, really, that kind of, that's really what they're going for, because I think at the end of the day, we live in such a like tweet based culture, too. It's like, well, what's that 15 second
that
clip?
Sound,
right.
Yeah,
where you just
sure.
clap back at Elizabeth Warren. She's like, and they're like, right. boom.
Right.
Right. But I mean,
got him.
It's interesting because the mainstream media would kind of, and I know people who are like, well, you guys are just like these Hollywood leftists who, you know, think everybody supports Warren, and like people are actually more center than you think. And that's why Biden's like out there, is still consistently in the lead in a lot of national polls. But I think it's just, it just seems like unbalanced the way the media covers. Like, Bernie is not considered a serious candidate at
no,
all.
No, even though he like, very much is.
It really reminds me of 2004, the way they covered Howard Dean, where he was just like this upstart. I mean, it actually reminds me of how they covered Trump at first. It's just like they don't really believe that there's any chance that the person can win because they're not a traditional
candidate.
I think
we got to zoom out a little bit more because it's corporate-owned media.
Right.
They could never start engaging with the ideas of Bernie Sanders in a very authentic or genuine way.
Right.
Because that is a threat. That's an existential threat to the business model that they're operating on.
Right.
They're like, it's like a fucking fire podcast where a bunch of forest fires talk about fire extinguishers or some shit.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I love this. I love getting the flame extinguished. Like,
right.
It just doesn't, I think it's counterintuitive. And I think that's where they really show their bias too, because I think that's why Elizabeth Warren is a little bit safer for the mainstream media, because she still identifies as a capitalist.
Yeah.
But That, I mean, when you look also to the amount that Bernie actually spoke too, if you're like going off a word count, he was down there like closer to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's just sort of how things go right now in this country.
If you look at the 538 polls, the people who won the debate, they did like a poll with Ipsos where they interviewed 3,000 people before the debates, like in the week leading up, and then interviewed 1,000 of those same people. So like, you know, saw how it changed. And Elizabeth Warren had the highest like increase in her approval or like favorability rating. Bernie Sanders was second and Pete Buttigieg was third.
Right.
So
can I ask you something though?
Yeah.
I mean, I pay attention to the polls as well.
Mm.
But after 2016,
right?
I kind of feel like,
yeah,
you know,
no, I don't think I don't. I used the polls as like a fucking hit, like off a blunt or something. Like,
right.
Okay, fool, I can relax. These polls, these stay steady, Hillary.
I really did.
Beat this dude. Good.
I did.
The
I mean,
numbers
even
shifting
on election day. The New York Times, because you know the New York Times had
the New
that.
New York Times really oh, fucked up, and the they, Washington they had, Post they, too.
She was in the 90s throughout the day. Remember?
Yeah.
She was in the high 90s.
In the high 90s, yeah.
Like, so that's the thing. So I don't pay attention to any of that shit. 538 had it as like 1 in 3 that Trump would win, and they said exactly how it would happen if he did win.
If it was, and is right. that how it played out?
And that's
so
how
was 538
out.
The poll that you give the most credence
yeah.
to?
Yeah, so okay. they completely okay. nailed 2012 like down to the county of like who would,
wow.
how Obama would win.
Yeah.
And then people, because they were sort of, like, you know how, like, people just become the brand of something? Like, Einstein is the brand of smart. Like,
okay.
538 became the brand of polling. It was
okay.
just like, okay, they represent
right.
all polling. And, like, 99% of the polls got it completely the fuck wrong. And because everybody had 538 as the brand of polling, everyone's like, well, Nate Silver, fuck him. Like, and I think he was wrong on a bunch of things, but he was still, like, not out there over his skis saying is 99%.
Right, was not as wrong.
Yeah, he was like, this yeah. can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
So that's why I still pay attention to 538,
understood.
And
okay.
they generally have a pretty good level of skepticism and, you know, caution when it comes to their own numbers.
I think the difference now is I look at polls and I go, okay, that's how some people are feeling right now.
Right.
Versus, okay, this is reality.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what, that 2016, I was like, this is reality.
Yes.
Fucking quantified for my brain.
Yes.
Great. We're good.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, that's how some people feel.
But
we still don't know. Every motherfucker still has to get out and vote.
And in the end, you know, I mean, this is not my area of expertise at all, but I have many friends that are smarter than me that I've spoken to a lot. In the end, somebody on Bill Maher said this, a woman, I wish I could remember her name so I could give her credit. It was racial animus, wasn't it?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a response to 8 years of a black president that gave us what we have now.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I think that all of us, well, first of all, the people that started talking about post-racial, whoever created that term needs to be slapped.
Yeah.
And so then so many of us settled into this comfort of thinking that, oh, okay, you know, things are kind of stabilizing. And I think that it just, you know, we became more Islamophobic as a country, you know, and then all of these things started bubbling up. And I think that, you know, people were like, I've had 8 years of a black president. Now you want me to elect a woman?
Right.
Yeah.
there's a limit to
right.
how much.
What was the thing Malcolm Gladwell was talking about in his podcast about how there was a female, like there's a woman painter that showed at one of these galleries like in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And that like based on the placement of her painting, that like gave it a little bit of cachet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year they didn't do it because they felt they're like, well, we had a woman this last year, so we're good.
Right.
Yeah. It was sort of
quota.
Yeah.
Quota satisfied.
Yeah. It was sort of like aligning that same thinking with a lot of white voters who are like, well, we had a black president for 8. I think we're good. Okay. Now let me just go with Trump now. Because
right.
I did that.
Right. I'm just hoping that means that now that we've had an openly racist president for 4 years, that people will be like, okay, enough of that shit.
Right. Like,
let's.
Well, you heard Chris Rock's joke, right? Chris Rock has this joke about the presidents, and I will never do it justice, but he essentially says, well, you know, so-and-so gave us so-and-so, so-and-so gave us so-and-so, so now after Trump, we should get Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like literally.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in the form of Armageddon, because yes. Christ will return because it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like in that sense. That might be it.
Yeah.
That could be it.
That does seem to be his jam, according to Southern Baptists.
Well, and all the evangelicals, they're like, yeah. They really are. They're like, shit.
Jesus
okay.
loves the end times.
They're like, bring him home.
Well, let's talk about the apocalyptic nature of what's happening in the White House, because yeah. this story fucked me up.
Okay, so in late August, the wife of a American diplomat that was in the UK, her name is Anne Sekulis. She was so she's in the UK, the wife of an ambassador. She's driving on the wrong side of the road,
right?
Because it's the UK,
and she
struck and killed a 19-year-old who was riding on his motorcycle because she was on the wrong side of the road.
Mm.
She spoke to the police the day of the accident, I think then the next day, and then fucked off a couple weeks later under diplomatic immunity.
Were things looking like bad for her maybe?
I mean, I doubt she disputed the fact that she was driving on the wrong side of the road and killed this person.
Oh, she did?
I mean, how do you dispute that?
Right.
I don't think you can.
Oh, I thought you said she did.
No. I think that's pretty much accepted. And right. I think local police actually tried to object to her using diplomatic immunity to return to the U.S. But, you know, this is where we are. She's in the U.S. and the family of this guy, Harry Dunn, they are looking for justice for their son because their son was killed by someone who was just grossly negligent at best.
Right.
And so they've gone from everything from asking for, you know, the help of like politicians in the UK, getting on TV. They've been in New York doing a press conference. They were invited to the White House a couple of days ago.
Right. So last week they had something with like an American diplomat where they were like, oh, that was just a photo op. And
yeah,
like, there was like a camera in the car with them. I remember seeing that last week. They were like weeping and they were like, that was just a fucking photo op for that asshole. So Cut to,
they have an invitation to the White House. They've been wanting to speak to the president. The father of this young man who died said, I just want to be able to speak to him parent to parent to say, what would you do if you lost your child and this person who was responsible for their death was able to just skate because on some diplomatic immunity shit. So they get their chance. The president comes in. According to the family, he was very kind and consoled them. I doubt that. Because right. I feel like they still need something from Trump. So they're not going to be like, yo, this fool is fucking ass. I don't know. I right. believe. I just can't. I've never seen Trump actually console someone in a convincing way. Then things got fucking weird. So this is from the report. It says, the family says that Trump surprised them with the bombshell news that Anne Sekulis, the wife of the U.S. diplomat, was in an adjoining room. Photographers were waiting in the wings, said a family spokesperson, who described the encounter as an ambush. So they were like, oh, I hear you so much. Actually, the woman who killed your son is in the next room with
cameras.
That's
reality TV show
shit,
right? Yeah,
exactly.
Right. It's exactly it.
And they were just, apparently for people who saw it, they were positioned to get like this angle of like the moment where the family saw the woman responsible for killing their son.
Jesus.
And they were like, they said, nah, we're good. We're not, we don't want to do that. This feels awful. And we're only,
oh, good. So
yeah,
they said they shut it down.
Yeah, they said, we are only interested in meeting her on our terms. And on UK soil.
Yeah, and on our soil.
Yeah,
extradition.
Exactly. And there's talks of that. But I mean, again, it's just another moment where I think, I don't know what, it's one of those things where, you know, this was Trump's idea from the beginning.
Right.
I'm sure there are people who are like, oh, I don't know. But at this point in the White House, like if he says he wants to fucking, you
all
know,
the people who say, I don't know, are gone.
I want to do a double XL cipher with Kanye West. It'll be fucking sick. Like doing some shit like that. I think they just are like, fuck it. Okay, whatever. And it's the most tasteless, just fucked up thing you could do to exploit this family's grief. And I don't know how he thought that was going to make him look exactly. Like, what even in your mind is the home run version of this surprise meeting? That they hug and they say, I forgive you. Don't worry. You know, I get it, man. We drive wacky on the other side of the road in the UK. How are you supposed to know?
Right.
Like, I don't know what even the most ideal version of that scenario is.
Brought healing,
a lot of understanding. But I just don't, it's just a very surreal, just evil moment.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Succession.
Right. I actually haven't seen the
Succession. Oh, man, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
But surreal evil.
Yeah, right. No,
haven't
absolutely.
We been living with surreal evil for a long time where you kind of go, this can't be real, this is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking evil.
Right. And I think that's where I'm trying to just be like, I have to measure my shock with my accept. Not that I accept that this is what the situation is, but I understand that this is the situation we're in with this president.
Right.
Right. Well, we're all living in that duality.
Yeah, exactly.
This conflicted place where you're like, but you can't be surprised. But how can we not be surprised? I'm desensitized. I don't want to be desensitized.
Right.
You know, it's the fatigue.
Yeah.
It's the fatigue of living in this duality.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to sort of thread that needle of being like, well, I can't numb myself to this because then I won't be a worthy advocate or someone who can speak up to anything if I'm completely just like check out
My
own well-being.
Right.
But there is, I have to kind of like.
And yet I must.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Yeah. To a certain level, it's like you can't take your eye off the ball because the second you start being like, yeah, it's all good, then that's when you fully, the slow boil has began on you.
Yeah.
But it's impossible not to be desensitized.
Exactly. But don't you think that's part of our emotional necessity that we can't allow? Because otherwise you would feel like you were getting fucking punched in the solar plexus every fucking day.
This would define another presidency, but this will just be forgotten by tomorrow, probably.
Well, yeah, and I think it's all in self-preservation that we have these mechanisms to whether
that
we
precisely,
not, yeah, to,
precisely.
What are you going to do? Just implode on yourself?
Yeah.
And some people have. You know, I know plenty of people who've had to completely disengage from the news, and I think if you're able to stay engaged somewhat and maintain your well-being, great. Hopefully this show does that for you because we try not to, try and keep a light, but, also try and put the light on the darkness a little bit. But I think, it's a very, very trying time. And when you just see things like this, it seems like some shit in a fucked up movie.
Yeah.
But it's not. Right. And that's what people need to remind themselves. Because at least the first step is going to the polls, but that's not going to change much if we're going to be real.
We
got to get the president out, though, for sure.
I have a friend who totally disengaged with the news, but he's working for Stacey Abrams on preserve the right to vote thing. Like, that's a good
In what capacity?
I don't want to get into.
No, but is it a policy thing or?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but you can still be disengaged from the news and still.
I think, he's just
or he keeps it to the facts.
That's a very specific task that he's undertaken, right? It's a target, and so I can see that.
Yeah, that's probably
But I mean, that's pretty dope to, have a outlet to, it's one thing to disengage with the news and then just ignore it. It's another to, engage with the problem while not having to immerse yourself
in
the bullshit.
Your energy's being used constructively.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was just bragging that I know somebody who knows Stacey.
That's
good
fine.
For you.
Yeah. My mom took a photo with everybody from Succession.
I know, man. So. What the fuck? That blew my mind.
Hold that.
All right. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back, and Hot 97, the legendary rap radio station, has announced their Tekashi policy.
Yeah, no Tekashi.
Yeah, no Tekashi.
Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Unless he has a hit.
Well, here's the deal, okay? He was cooperating with the police to get the Nine Trey Bloods on the hook for some stuff, and anyone who's seen a movie or has been anywhere near rap music would know that's probably not advisable, okay? Or rather, there are consequences. And usually what you would do if you wanted to stand up for something like that, you would go into something called witness protection. So that way no one can find you and there will be no retaliation against you. This man has decided to forego witness protection. He is going to just go resuming his rap career. And many people from all corners of hip hop are like, I don't know if that's the best thing.
Oh, he's not going into witness protection?
No, he's not going into witness protection. He also, there's a rumor too, TMZ reported that he has signed a deal with the first label he was with worth like $10 million to put out two albums. So there are people like investing in this too now. And Hot 97 has come out that basically says when he is released from prison and drops new music, the radio station will not jump to debut any of the records. And they don't anticipate playing any of his music at all. Unless there is an outcry because the hit is so big that they don't want to fuck up their numbers. Because at the end of the day, look, you got to do what the people want. But I think it's easy to say that he'll probably never be at a summer jam for sure. Because I think with the amount of just security he would need or what would happen.
What about the insurance?
Yeah,
imagine
exactly.
Imagine what the right. policy looks like. Your COI, like your insurance policy to have somebody like that there. It's
yeah, this is a little abstract to me. What do you imagine would cost to insure a show like where someone who...
I literally have no idea, but I just know that if I was the venue, if I was the promoter, that I would absolutely take that into consideration.
Yeah,
That there's a potential liability there.
Right.
A massive, massive liability.
I don't understand. That's why it's funny. This has been kind of one of these moments where I feel like there's old hip-hop heads and younger hip-hop heads who don't see eye to eye on this.
Right.
Where a lot of, I think, and it's probably because of the evolution of rap music, where a lot of people who were in the streets were the first people rapping. Mm-hmm. And now there are a lot of people who from the comfort of their living rooms have taken on these personas and are now dabbling in this world too, where some people are like, he's fine. It's all good. Nobody's going to touch him, blah, blah, blah. Then I could believe a world where that's true because there's so much attention on him. But I also believe there's another world that operates in a completely different way too, that he's sort of immersed himself in. That I'm not sure where that ends.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't really know much about this boy. I don't really pay attention to hip hop like that these days. But am I right in my understanding that he took on a persona that was not necessarily genuine.
No, that's not, yeah.
So to me, that's the interrogation that I think should be made.
Right.
Right? Hypothesizing about whether or not he's going to come into harm, and I don't wish anybody harm, is less interesting to me than the conversation around what is it to feign something for commercial reasons, mm-hmm. right? And then to it's like a tattoo that you can put on temporarily and take off, right?
Right.
And I think it's so social. I think it's political because, from what I understand about people that are in gangs, there it's not like there are a lot of other options.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're not paying attention to and not being sympathetic and empathetic to what does it actually mean for the, what are they called? The nine what?
Nine Trey Bloods.
Yeah, for the nine Trey Bloods, like having any sympathy for that or trying to do anything to make that situation better if they wanted that, but you also want to kind of have the grill, run the tap. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I just think that that's a conversation that I would like people who know more about me, which is probably everybody at this point, but from where I sit, having known artists who did live on, you know, on the crime side, the New York Times side,
right.
To wear that as an accessory, I think is what should also be part of the conversation.
Right. That we're sort of still glorifying, like that's a roadmap somehow.
Well, it's not necessarily, yes, part of it is a glorification, but I think what I find offensive is that this is for gangs, and again, I don't know very much, but gang life, I think we can safely say, is dangerous.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it is something that is problematic, and for someone to simply say that I think it's cool,
right,
and therefore I want to have the veneer of being in the gang, but I actually have the privilege that I don't actually have to be within that ecosystem,
right?
Which could be life or death,
mm-hmm.
is the thing that I take issue with, that you're feigning a lifestyle that for some people is very, very real and potentially very, very dangerous,
right.
is, I think that's
and boils down to
fucked up.
Growing and also just a lack of opportunity where that is your only recourse.
Right. Whereas that's not your reality,
right.
for the person that
you're
takes it
Danny
on.
Danny Hernandez or whatever his real name is.
Right.
And like people showing him in his little
right, and
prom
he just,
photos. And he's just like, okay, you know what? I'm going to have these dudes in the videos with me
right.
to try and again.
Right.
Because I think there is this thing of like, a lot of people take that gangster culture and that lends it this air of credibility or authenticity.
Right.
And I think, and again, to what you're speaking about, it's true. It's like, how are we determining what's authentic? And is that what we see as authentic still? Because I think these are all like layers that have kind of happened as the onion of hip hop is peeled. Mm-hmm. Like you see sort of mm-hmm. what's, you know, what used to be, what is the future and things like that. But yeah, it is odd when it comes with a lot of consequences. And yeah, like to your point too, there, it really is gangs exist because it's a system. There's a systemic failure. Like we
right.
failed people
right.
where their only recourse right. is to get into the streets like that.
Right.
And that is another dimension of it that I think is probably left out because yeah, even for me too, I'm more like, I'm in like the tabloidy version of hip hop too, thinking like, okay, Tekashi,
right.
good luck.
Right.
And then also, it's good to have you here too, Sophia, because it's a little bit sobering to sort of look at it a little bit clearer too and be like, this is a much larger thing. And
right,
we're looking at a very narrow.
So now he
dimension.
Gets fucking, he's getting $10 million. Like, what are you going to take a million of those $10 million and maybe put it towards the community that you exploited
right.
for
right.
your success?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is your level of activism if you're going to put on the mantle?
Right.
Right.
You know, and yeah, I just, ugh.
Yeah, oof. And I mean, you look at people like Nipsey Hussle too, who was active, came from the streets,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and actively saw why he was there, why his evolution was the way it was, and mm-hmm. tried to change that.
Right.
And his life ended tragically.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are the kind of, you know, you can see that there are levels to the way a lot of rappers look at where they come from, what their place is, and if they're doing, like, am I just doing this because I like the shine and I want to wear bathing ape hoodies? Or am I doing something because, like, I actually realize, like, I don't want anybody to have to do what I did.
Right.
Hove did that.
Right.
So hopefully you won't have to go through that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if authenticity is becoming less of a thing in like modern hip hop and just modern culture in general, because we have like YouTube stars who are like the Paul brothers, who are just like bad.
They're just caricatures of themselves. WWE
caricatures of like something, but like not actually believably authentic in any way.
Right. Well, but then I think, but really the artists that do really well are the actual artists,
right,
you know, who are really like, this is me. This is what I'm doing. This is how I'm choosing to express myself, no matter what the genre is.
Right.
And 'cause I think there's a sincerity about someone really expressing themselves truly, that no matter what the beats are, the lyrics or the package, it just connects with people on a deeper level.
Right.
You know, I think that authenticity is a term that's thrown around a lot these days.
Right.
And look, I think that I am very authentic. I think I have a very authentic voice. I think that my memoir is very authentic, and anything that I do is authentic. So if people are going to be storytellers, and the claim is that they are telling their own story, right, as opposed to writing fiction,
right,
then I want authenticity.
Right.
And I think that MCs would probably consider themselves storytellers. I think the best of them are. And herein, I also want authenticity. That's why I think I'm having an issue with saying, okay, you know, I'm down with this, or I do that, or, you know, going back to the guys I was telling you about in the industry who,
right,
you know, suddenly acted like they were, you know, so down.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, one of the most beautiful manifestations of authenticity in hip hop was Redman's episode of Cribs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, this
legendary.
Is, you know, for that show, MTV Cribs, they used to rent houses for the rappers.
Right.
They used to rent cars,
yeah,
for the rappers. So that's the furthest thing from authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. That's the opposite. And he so disrupted that.
Yeah,
he completely subverted that model.
He's like, let's
right?
hop over my
right because
cousin.
Right because exactly here's the box on top of here's a cereal box on top of my fridge that has the dollar bills in it,
right.
And I think that's also speaks very much to his talent and his confidence in knowing there's nothing that I could do or show you that's going to ever shake who I am as Redman.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so the notion that there is a show based on luxury,
right,
on aspirational living, and it's all about consumerism, that too is kind of offensive to me. I never fucking watched that show.
Right. Mm.
I never watched Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. I never watched any of those things that shoved in my face, wouldn't your life be amazing if it was this?
Right.
Because those are not the things that define happiness.
Yeah, they're all external.
That's right. They're completely external. And look, I would love a nice big fat crib. I'd love to fucking fly private and all that. I would love that. But that's not, I'm not on the paper chase.
Right.
So the fact that there was so much programming, I don't know if there is anymore. I don't really watch television like that. But the fact that there was so much programming around wanting to be wealthy and live in luxury, I think is kind of gross, to the point that you fake it. Again, it's faking
right?
Rent this house. Which house do you want? I want the one with the fucking big ass, you know, I want the one with the big ass aquarium, and it's got to have the, you know,
like
the staircase.
Nelly, that house. I remember that one. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
He
but
had an obscene aquarium.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, just all of those markers
right.
of success, which are firmly based in capitalism.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Which kind of goes back to the conversation about billionaires. Like,
right.
capitalism, my girlfriend Treva Lindsay said, capitalism makes this shit hard, Soph.
Yeah.
It makes it hard.
Yeah.
You know, it just necessarily, if you think about it, it necessarily compromises everything we do. I own a home.
Exactly right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's funny too, as you say, like, They need to sell a mirage of aspirational wealth and mm-hmm. things like that, because to really inoculate people or get people to buy into that thinking is precisely the kinds of shit you see in the form of like centrism, where really evaluating what the issues are and if there is a class of wealth in this country that is actually working against everything, and a lot of systemic issues are coming from this mentality of like consume, consolidate,
as
gather
much
as much as possible.
Right. Yeah.
to the detriment of others, you like that's sort of how these programs function. Because it's sort of like this thing in the back of your mind. It's like, well, I don't should I be mad at millionaires? Because like, what right. if I'm a millionaire? You know what I mean? Right. Like that would be sick.
Right.
So maybe I should go easy on them because that could be me. You know what I mean? Like there's that subtle. It works on your subconscious because for me as a fucking 14-year-old probably watching Cribs at the time, 15. I was full. I fully.
I'm sure you
shit.
Found it completely fucking, seductive. Of course, how could you not? Over. And most people would. Absolutely.
I went to the back of the Source magazine and ordered fake canary yellow diamond earrings and shit. I wanted to fucking show out because, in my mind, that really was. I had a very one dimensional idea of what success or happiness was, and it was purely
as do most of
get
us.
Get shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's where we live. We live in America.
Right.
Right. I love fancy things. I wear a Gucci hat. I buy Prada shoes. You know, I absolutely am part of this system. There's mm-hmm. no doubt in my mind. You know, the other thing I think about you guys in terms of authenticity is that, you know, I came up in an era where there was no social media.
Right.
Okay? And so I think, is it safe to say that Instagram is probably the most robust platform for artists?
Definitely
more so than Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
It depends on where you're at. But yeah, Instagram for sure is, yeah.
Right? So let's say I have 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 million followers, and it's all about pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's all about what I wear, where I live, what I drive, whom I'm fucking, what I'm eating, what I'm drinking. I mean, I cannot imagine you guys how onerous it is to sustain this Big Willie, back in the day we used to say Big Willie, this Big Willie lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, so what if you walk down the street and you just want to like, you're not wearing whatever the fuck, or whatever the brands are, or whatever the sneakers are and stuff like that, you know? I never want to be in a position where I'm going to be embarrassed. I take Uber pools.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fucking immigrant. When I look at the $4 price difference, I'm like,
fuck that.
I could afford the $4, but I can't.
Yeah,
constitutionally, as an immigrant, I can't.
You hear a voice in your head being like, really?
Yeah, my mother. My mother going, why don't you take the subway, right? And I'm like, I'm treating myself to a pool. But just the notion of, you know, going back to authenticity, a lot of that too, I think, is not necessarily authentic because I think a lot of the artists out there are spending their money on these things that present a lifestyle, but then do you own a home?
Right.
Do you have a trust for your children?
Right.
Right.
Where is your money parked?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you might not go into the stock market or whatever, but is it somewhere? Because some of these guys, millions of dollars will go through their hands and leave their hands.
Right.
And that's okay. Look, if I was a 19-year-old kid, I'd spend the shit out of my money. I would be off the chains. I would be off the rails. I would be foolish, right? But the notion that I now, oh, fuck you guys, I got to pose. Hang on, I got to go buy these shoes. Hang on, I got to go do that. I got to go do that. That's a lot.
I got to pose by this, like, villa.
I've got to be in a G5.
Well, yeah.
I got to pretend my friends from TV are also my friends in reality.
Oh,
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I think the Instagram is the perfect sales tool because it sells people on seemingly authentic versions of life because people, it's like, well, a person posted that, not person with a stylist, fucking whole marketing plan.
And lighting.
Lighting. Right. who has someone probably editing the photo itself.
Absolutely.
Who probably has deals going with brands to figure out like, okay, well, here's a deal. We'll get you to this location and then do subtle things. And that kind of helps, you know, create this thing of longing through your phone screen.
Yeah, and it's even worse for women.
Right.
Right? So, okay, take that picture, but get rid of all my age spots, you guys.
Get rid
of the bags under my eyes and get rid of the wrinkles and everything, and I'm going to get surgery and I'm going to do all this and I'm going to, you know, my tits are going to be bigger, my waist is going to be smaller, my ass is going to be bigger, and no shade to anybody that does this. I'm that's not what I'm saying, but we are living in a time where we can actually buy a certain kind of beauty, right? So if we have the means and we're all going towards, frankly, what I think is a very a narrow, right, definition of beauty, well, first of all, we're going to become more homogenous, which I never like, right? And then what does it mean for me raising a daughter who is a yellow girl, again, in a white world, right, who does not fit into this paradigm of beauty? How do I tell her if she says to me, and she never would, but if she said to me, Mommy, I want to get a this job or a that job or whatever,
right.
You know, the things that we have to battle. And so to be a famous woman too, like nobody gives a fuck what a man eats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay? Nobody gives a fuck.
Right.
But if somebody sees an actress, let's say she's a thin actress and she's eating a cheeseburger and like, what, that's a fucking story now?
Right.
Like, who gives a fuck?
Whoa, she's brave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She's brave for eating what she wants.
Exactly.
It's like, we're fucking human beings. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's, yeah. And I think also, like, growing up in LA, man, I see how quickly people's shit gets poisoned by this, like, performative.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Like, wealth
yeah.
shit. And it's,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
and
it's
the beauty
exhausting.
Shit, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to go out and I'm going to be on the red carpet, you know what? Sophia's not quite pretty. You know what? I think I have to upgrade from Sophia.
Right,
right,
right.
Yeah.
I've got to get somebody who's younger and thinner
yeah.
and this and
yeah.
that.
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, like, I can't pull up to a party with
that's
you
because right.
you're a college student.
That's right, and so I can't pull up in this car either.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
Okay, what, you going to park your Prelude around the corner?
Right.
Yeah.
We'll act like our limo broke down? Okay. Let me
I
tell you something. That Prelude fucking goes, Ma.
I ride a city bike in New York, so,
yeah.
And I take Uber pools. So.
There you go. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, right, I think it's about people being able to realign what makes them happy or redefine what makes them happy, I think, because we have the, because consumer culture makes us think, when I attain X, then I will be happy.
That's right.
Not, I will be happy.
Right.
Right.
Then I can attain whatever.
Right. And those things have to be the gravy, not the meat,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right?
Like my ex, and I talk about this in my memoir, is a 34th generation Shaolin monk. And when we started seeing each other, I was a stylist and he started wearing Prada Sport and stuff like that. And he looked really great. And I remember people looking askance at him and they're like, oh, I didn't know that Buddhist monks could wear Prada. Like, you know what, suck a dick, homie, because it's not about him wearing the Prada. It's about him being attached to it and he would never be attached to
right,
it.
Right, right,
right. Right? He fucking slept on a concrete floor for
right.
like 25. I don't think he's going to care right. if he can't wear a fucking Prada jacket
yeah.
tomorrow.
Yeah. It's like
right.
not having running water. We'll kind of do that to you.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So right. the notion, it's not about having it. For me, it's about I have to actively exercise not being attached to it. And I think that what's really, really important for us spiritually and just for our soul and our internal happiness is to not let the external world define it. Am I happy if I buy a new pair of shoes? Sure I am. But does that define my happiness or
yeah.
define me? Of course it doesn't.
Right.
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 Because if the shoes are taken away and it fucks you up,
right.
then
right.
that
that's
ain't
exactly
it.
It. Yeah. That, right.
What the happens when I say it's the same thing with praise, right? Of getting too attached to people's praise.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, that can feel good, but if that becomes your be all end all,
right.
what do you do when that you no longer
right.
hear that?
Right.
Will
you have,
crump?
Right.
It's like enough, it's a good reminder,
right.
but I don't need that. I don't feed off. That's not my fucking oxygen.
Exactly.
Right.
You have to have your internal barometer and your internal compass have to be so fucking solid. And then all of it is like, you take it and it comes and it goes and it's fine.
Yeah. Smooth yeah. like water, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's like Bruce Lee. Be like water, my friend.
Well, Sophia, it has been a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist.
Thank you.
Where can people find you and follow you?
So I am, for me, because I'm a rapper, Instagram is definitely where I am the most vocal and visible. That's Soph Chang NYC, SophChangNYC. That is also where you can find me on Facebook, and my Twitter handle is Soph Chang. And my website is sophchang.com. And again, those hoodies are at bonfire.com/baddestbitchintheroom.
Boom. Get the book, too.
And
the book is
and the audiobook.
Bitch.
Yes, the baddest
dropping
bitch
science
in the room
on this fucking thing.
Is available only on audible.com. Shout out to my Audible team.
Hey.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
So there is a tweet that somebody posted. I think her name is Bo Ren, B-O-R-E-N, and her Twitter handle is Bosefina, B as in boy, O-S-E-F-I-N-A. And she said, my parents were tasked with the job of survival and I with self-actualization. The immigrant generational gap is real. What a luxury it is to search for purpose, meaning, and fulfillment.
Mm.
I found that so profound for first gen immigrants. You know, you realize that your parents, it was all about survival.
Yeah.
That's right. It was about survival for them and providing the best life for their children.
Yeah.
You know, I've been having this conversation a lot with my first gen Asian immigrant friends. You know, did you ever ask your mother if she was happy?
No.
Yeah. None of us did.
No.
Did you guys ever talk about her internal life or what her dreams were? No. We didn't.
I mean, you know, it's funny. My mom had a kind of, she was luckily empowered. My grandfather was like a German philosophy professor. He was really into philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And he very much instilled in her, like, yo, go do what the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same, but then she has that guilt too, that sort of inbuilt of like, well, do I go do what I want? Like, I'm saying it, but do I, what the fuck? And I can feel that even in, like, because I think my mom would like to be a novelist, but she writes, she's a film critic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like that thing that scratches the itch, but might not be the thing deep down. You know what I mean?
I mean, how many first-gen Asian immigrants do I know that went into the artistic field? I know a lot because this is the field that I'm in.
Right.
But most of us, lawyer, doctor, scholar, engineer.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just, and so how do you deviate from that path when your parents have made these profound sacrifices?
Yeah.
What, you know, mom, I want to be a sculptor.
You better sculpt that report card into a 4.0. What the fuck are you talking about?
1600.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. I got a sculpture for you. The fucking lawnmower outside. Get to work. Sculpt that lawn.
Miles, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. A few tweets I like. This is from at Drive45Music. It says, my girlfriend just added uncooked pasta to cold water and then turned on the stove. And when I said she should boil the water before adding pasta, she said, literally all men are the same.
That's hilarious. That's
going to
be my answer for everything, too.
Also, Reductress, at Reductress, quiz, are you even good enough to have imposter syndrome?
Oh, shit, that's so good.
Is it amazing?
God damn.
I think you're kind of an imposter imposter.
Yeah, like, are you sure? What?
That's hilarious.
Another Reductress one, how to keep things casual so he doesn't make you watch The Sopranos. And lastly, Wheel of Fortune answers at WOF answers. They basically show like Wheel of Fortune grids after the first letter is shouted out. So in this one, it looks like a long ass word. And the first letter called out was T. There's only four T's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the tweet says, the answer is titty sucking potato mouth. Because that's what would have fit in those words. I'd like to solve.
Eli at Eli Uden tweeted, whoa, just got my results back from 23andMe. Turns out I'm 100% not supposed to send in urine.
not supposed to send in urine.
That's hilarious.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what's that going to be today?
Let's do a track from ESG from the South Bronx. Wonderful band. We've played a lot, like maybe one or two of their songs before. But this song, You Make No Sense, I think is just fitting for right now. A lot of shit not making sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this is ESG, You Make No Sense. Such a, I mean, man, the samples that they've given to hip-hop,
All right, we're going to ride out on that. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast, and we'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.